Welcome to the IT Experience Podcast. This is a podcast for those who are interested in IT experience management in large enterprises. If you use ServiceNow or other enterprise service management system to provide services to employees, then this is for you. Brought to you by Happy Signals, more smiles, less time wasted.
Hello and welcome to today's podcast episode. This is the Happy Signals IT Experience Podcast, and today our guest is Simone Jo Moore, who was recommended to us by another podcast guest. Welcome to the podcast, Simone.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here, Sakri.
It has been very interesting to the conversations we had prior to recording around so many different aspects of AI, of humans, and of what it means to be human in today's IT world, and agents. And I mean, it has gone in many different directions, but I think today we'll be looking a little bit more about on the topic of service desk and AI. But before going there, would you like to just introduce yourself, say, tell us a little bit about where you come from, who you are, what you do, and the usual stuff?
Oh my goodness. Okay, so I'm an Australian and I've been living in France for 9 years now. So been really enjoying, I think, the different perspectives of Europe, and also all the different countries in Europe, the different thoughts and focus and culture and way of working, and seeing how that manifests itself so differently sometimes, yet in all the different countries that I work with, how much there are so many human things that are still at our very core that make a difference in the way we respond to the world. I began my love affair with technology very early on, and of course the technology shifts in over my career have been quite a journey. From learning to type on a manual typewriter, telex machines, Murray code, Morse code, PABXs, comms equipment, satellites, submarine cabling, all sorts of wonderful things. So my career has been quite long, but now as a consultant, coach, trainer, I zoom along with everyone else. And my background includes, I didn't go straight into IT. My background includes HR, organizational change, and development, and complementary health. So for me, the most fascinating technology is actually the human brain, because this leads into areas like machine humanity, and being the editorial director for the Era of Humanizing IT docuseries, and writing about ethics in AI and emotional AI. And also the other editorial director for a very recent documentary called The Youth Rise in Power, which looks at the influence of Gen Y and Gen X and Gen Z on our interaction with technology and our influence, how it influences us, how we influence it, and also how those newer generations are influencing our future.
That's really interesting. And with that varied background, there still are certain sort of guiding principles that you hold near and dear to the work that you do. Would you like to tell us what those guiding principles are?
Yes, I found it quite interesting that even though there has been a lot of change, that there are some very core things in our humanness that stays. What's the word I'm looking for, that gives us that stability or foundation from which we might work. And no matter what type of work I've done or which client I have, my four key principles that I work with have really stood me well in as a platform, if you like, to help the clients move forward in their own journeys. So people connected is definitely my first one. A human's center of gravity can change, and sometimes our balance gets a little skewed, but it's really important that we help our people with the ability, provide the environment for them to build their resilience and be able to find their equilibrium through that ebb and flow of changes that happen, because change is a natural occurrence. It's always going to be there. So how we, you know, how people connect is really important. You need to explore your culture. You need to explore their interaction behaviors, the communication methods they like to use, and in the context of which environments that occurs. And that's where I'm looking to create that deep functional expertise that flows through the individual to the team and then out to the organization level. So that people connected, I find, is definitely the primary, because without people connected, my next principle of sharing knowledge just doesn't occur. So we really need to make sure that the way we connect people allows for that natural manifestation of sharing knowledge, because it is a natural byproduct of people being connected, and it is the lifeblood of any organization. So helping people engage fully with their knowledge builds collaboration, and it increases our capability. And through that strategic view of knowledge management, not just having a knowledge base, but looking at knowledge management as the view across the whole organization, gives us better operational viability. And that includes things like knowledge-centered services and intelligence swarming. And it gives our decision-making the best chance of successful outcomes when we have a knowledge management culture that's across the organization, because we can benefit from more accurate and more interested and relevant business learning as a result of sharing that knowledge. When we've shared our knowledge, my next principle is around how we discover our possibilities. We can't discover our possibilities unless we know what's going on. How healthy are we at this particular point in time? And it is a continuous and evolving environment. And so it needs that curiosity and exploration. We want to take a bird's eye vantage view and then dive into where we see the potholes and the canyons, so that we can understand the depth and the breadth of what's working and what's not working. And that also means giving our people a psychological safe space, so that we can also have that safe to fail experimentation and play, innovation, and help jumpstart people's thinking and their own evolution in their behavior and actions, and how that can either optimize or transform what we're doing. And ultimately, I mean, we didn't come this far to only come this far. So we want to realize our potential. And I find in most of the work I'm doing that people are looking externally for the solutions when the capability already exists within them. And they just need someone to help them see and use what's already within. And when we do have a gap with that capability, then, you know, look at those goals and set our creativity and intelligent solutions across the different frameworks, not relying on just one focus, that we can marry up the different approaches to create a stronger and better whole. And this is what I call mixology, or framework mixology, if you like, understanding and integrating the different, not the next normal, the next way. And integrate that so that we can have a better way of working embedded in the day-to-day culture of our teams, that making shifts, making, you know, giving us an updated jump point for the next part of our future is really important, and that it's just natural to change.
I like the thinking around that operational viability and how the different principles then build that operational viability. We're going to talk a little bit about service desks and artificial intelligence. And at Happy Signals, we do publish a benchmark report twice per year, where we look at the data that is also looks at quite deeply at the service desk, on what makes end users happy, what kind of factors will impact the experience in that human interaction between the agent and the end user. And one of the things that you mentioned there was that psychological safe space, so that the potential could be realized. And previously, you mentioned that somebody who spoke about intelligent disobedience. And in this constantly changing world, where new technologies come in and end users and agents alike will now be experimenting with artificial intelligence in different ways. It's just an idea, like the interesting idea, I think, around that intelligent disobedience combined with the psychological safe space, where then we can experiment to find what that good balance is. But now to the question, if we think about the service desk of tomorrow and what that looks like, how do you see AI and the service desk of tomorrow being interconnected?
Wow. There's so many different facets to that. I mean, primarily from where we currently exist in the service desk models, that, and I say models because there's more than one way, of course, to structure your service desk. And that also is a reflection of your culture too. So it's really quite interesting. I like to go in and see how service desks are structured, because it gives me a very good insight in how the organization is structured and how it communicates and how it disseminates, how it flows with its knowledge. It's quite interesting. From where we are now, I think most people are used to the term, we've had it for a long time, many years now, the term chatbots. And, you know, from that perspective, it's very simple, very easily scripted. Here's your question and here's the basic answers. It might throw up a couple of links and say, here, try this area for your search, and so on. The difficulty is that it's not necessarily conversational. It relies also on the customer being able to ask the question in a particular way. So I think where machine learning and AI has definitely made some strong inroads is in the amount of data it requires and having it done in human conversational language, not just in, you know, my printer's not printing, but saying server X7LYZ isn't working. You know, having what's the type of conversation that you're expecting to have on your service desk? One of the easiest ways, of course, is that looking at the tickets that you have, the calls that you have, and look at the types of questions that are asked by your customers, and look at the conversation from that perspective as well. And conversation implies there are at least two people having a discussion. And this is where I think the service desk of tomorrow, taking chatbots beyond where they are and giving the human being an out as well. There is nothing more frustrating than being caught in a chatbot loop and not being able to exit and choose to speak to a human being. So I think in, you know, at its very lowest level, this is where some service desks are at, where they are truly needing to have a good evaluation of the types of conversations that are happening with the customers and therefore designing the chatbots that they have to cater towards those types of conversations. Now, there'll always be an out. You mentioned intelligent disobedience. And I think this is where our service desk analysts need that space. They need the guidelines to say, look, the process is never going to be 100% perfect. So given the context of that customer's situation, what is the best decision to make at this point in time? And the process might not perfectly match that, but we need to make sure that we are able to give our experts, these are what our service desk analysts are, they are problem solvers, they are professional communicators, allow them the right training, capability, and the guide rails or the principles, if you like, in which to make those decisions based on what knowledge is available to them at the time. And a lot of the time, service desk is time sensitive. So that would be the lowest form, I think, in AI, having that chatbot be conversational enough, have an external out for the customer to be able to speak to an analyst if they're not getting the answer they require, or it's just not making sense, or it's confusing for them in some way. But one of the other things that I really enjoyed when we were doing the documentary series on the era of humanizing IT was my thoughts around having a chatbot buddy, so an actual service desk colleague. It would be, because it's a very human thing having the conversation over the phone, you've got, and given the context, things aren't working, there can be heated arguments, there can be frustrations, there can be tears, like from a university student that's just lost 5 months of research. You know, there's all sorts of emotions that come into play. And as professional communicators at the service desk, one of our biggest skill sets needs to be emotional intelligence and have the agility to shift that conversation emotionally. With AI, there's been some really great developments. So, for example, there are voice analyzers out there now. And originally for health and mental health, for example, for PTSD, people with PTSD, that they're getting around an 80, 84% accuracy hit on being able to detect the levels of PTSD in people, like, you know, the anger, the fear, and those types of things. Now, imagine if we had our chat buddy colleague, AI colleague, service desk colleague there, and they are running, analyzing the customer's voice and being able to give us like the red, amber, green, if you like, as to the shifts emotionally of our customer. That would allow us to respond even more accurately within the conversation and help us respond more appropriately to how are we going to shift the conversation if our chatbot buddy is letting us know that customer is getting more frustrated or, you know, it's a combination of human and machine data together. We have our own ears and our own emotional intelligence to say what's, you know, understanding how the customer is. But imagine being able to build that relationship even stronger by having a visual understanding of what the customer's going through at the same time we're listening to it. I think our accuracy in our decision making would be so much better with something like that.
So if we look at that collaboration between an AI buddy and a service desk agent, that could potentially change the way that we would be looking at agents in terms of who is, say, talented service desk agents today versus talented service desk agent tomorrow. And the way that you described a service desk agent now was professionals in communication and problem solving. So, and with that emotional and also intelligence to be able to detect maybe the things that AI now is starting to be able to detect, the post-traumatic stress disorder patients and so forth. So it changes the dynamic. So how do you see the change there? Like, what is a talented service desk agent today if you compare to what we would see as a talented service desk agent tomorrow?
Well, it's quite interesting. When I think about the workshops I run on machine humanity, one of the questions I ask, is it dangerous or just misunderstood? And I could say the very same thing about a human being, couldn't I? Are they dangerous or just misunderstood? So we've all seen the movies of the different AIs out there, you know, right from the 1920s, through to nowadays, the difference, the way that we've always had this fascination about humanizing, you know, machines for so long. My question would be, well, certainly there are inroads being made by companies like SmartEye and Affectiva being combined in, you know, driverless cars. They have one of the hugest databases on reading emotions and things like that. But machines still don't feel. This is the point. Machines still don't have, they can replicate, they can make an assumption based on the data that has been input, but there's still going to be the bias there. Yet we have things like, when I think of an agent, there are, in mental health, they are actually using, they are using robot companions, where people are feeling more comfortable telling their story to a robot, even though it's being recorded and their visuals being recorded, et cetera, because there's no judgment. You know, the robot's not judging them. So whereas a human is always doing that. So when I think of a service desk agent, you know, we'd say, oh, well, we want all of this no judgment. We don't want to judge anyone. But the thing is we do judge, because that's part of our decision making. We have to, you know, all the time, this emotional data is part, and it is exact, emotions are data. They are part of our decision making. So this, how does our service desk agent, what parts of it do you want to remain human? What is most comfortable for the interaction for your customers? There are amazing neural network virtual agents being developed. And part of that is because of their ability to be more conversational and pick up on threads and see things and come up with a different question. But that takes a lot of learning. So I'm not quite sure. I think there are companies out there that are even extending it and saying, well, what about if our agents, considering that a lot of us still work remote, what about VR? Why don't we have the virtual reality? What about metaverse support desk agents? How far is that going to go, where we're sitting at home and we put the glasses on and the gloves on, and you know, our hand is magically appearing inside the computer of our customer? We've seen it happen with gaming over all the years, but now it's being applied far more, I think, in the commercial wish list. What are you hiring your people for is a very good question when it comes to the talent that they have. Yes, the machines can calculate and deep dive and do things a lot faster than certainly the majority of us do. And that is an advantage, and it's a commercial advantage. Yet what decisions do we need to remain human? So I think our service desk agents, you know, I like to call them, I don't want to call it human resources as such, because, you know, our people aren't something that we consume, or we certainly shouldn't be consuming our people in that way. You know, they are talent, and they need to be treated in that respect, that what is it that they bring to that table? Because it's more than just being a service desk agent. I don't want to tie people to a role title, because they are more than just being a service desk analyst. They are that problem solver. They build relationships with people. They are communicators, liaisons in a very unique way. And we want to tap into that talent. And if we allow them, AI, as it progresses as a virtual agent, to handle the majority of the deep dive stuff that we need the calculations on, but also to take care of those things that are easy, that we don't need to focus too heavily on. And our people then get that innovative, creative space to deal with the more complex problems. That's what we want to be able to take the most advantage of and benefit from, the people that are our talent.
So as we look at the talent working, solving these problems within the service desk, and AI being a part of it, we quite quickly come to the questions around ethics and emotions. And like you said, AI is still just AI. It can feel, it can replicate, and it might, maybe the bias is moved on from whoever trained the AI and whatever existing training material it has. But what are the things to consider when it comes to AI and ethics in specific?
Ethics in AI is a difficult one. The technology is far more advanced and faster in what's happening than what governments and laws and regulations can keep up with at this particular time. And there's a number of different ones around, the world that have, or if you like, techno ethics. There are a lot of ethical questions around AI systems and how we recognize and process the values and the ethical paradigms that exist, both from a country perspective, legal perspective. I mean, we see that there's, World Economic Forum have laid down some guidelines around the ethics. The European Union as well has put out some ethical guidelines for trustworthy AI. And so we're looking at the really fundamental rights and principles of humans in terms of, building trustworthy or human-centric AI as opposed to just a tool. We can't abrogate our responsibility or pass our decision-making responsibility onto the machines, if that makes sense to you. Yes, allow them to help us make our decisions, but there still has to be some human oversight. From one of the key things, if we look at some of the key requirements, where is the human agency and oversight? How technically robust and safe is the AI? What are the privacy and data governance? The transparency about how the AI has made its decisions and what data is laid underneath that. The diversity, non-discrimination, fairness, equity. What about the societal and environmental well-being and accountability? Where does, if something goes wrong, who do we talk to? How do we talk to it? If AI, for example, even in HR, say in the hiring of our talent, early on it has been shown that the AI was not fair in its judgment about what resumes are passed through and things like that. But we want to be able to see how, where those biases are. If AI makes a decision and says, well, no, I'm not putting you through for that job, I'm putting this person through, what is our recourse to address that, fight that decision or address that decision? So there's a lot of, it's very complicated. I can't make this easy in terms of that. There's a lot of different frameworks developed. You've got the OECD, which has been adopted in 42 different countries. You've got the United Nations Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights. You've got the IEEE, which is a global initiative around autonomous and intelligent systems. You've got the European Commission, the UK Data Ethics Framework. Australia has its IA, same with Canada. Singapore has proposed models. What I find really interesting is that if each country is developing its own, where is the marry up across the international global stage and what that actually means for us, considering how much we do work on a global stage. So I think there's a lot of, when we think about it, the technology or digital technology is really a catalyst for us to address some very core foundational human issues in regards to ethics, because that's it can be a very sticky place. I'm very pleased to see in Australia that we have some amazing things happening when it gets to ethics. So there's, for example, the Responsible Metaverse Alliance, and their principles that they've put out, it must benefit humans, society and environment. There must be human safety and environment-centered design. It must not discriminate. It has to be accessible to anyone that needs it. It has to be safe and reliable. The security and privacy. It needs to adhere to laws and societal norms. And that's a sticky area too. So you know, what is normal in our society, and is that normal even what we want it to be? We need to be able to contest it. It needs to have the transparency. It needs to be explainable. It needs to have accountability. So I think you'll find that no matter which framework that you look at in how we design, whether it's from the chatbot, front-end customer experience, whether it's the employee experience, whether it's the DEI or the corporate social responsibility of the organization on a global or local level, I think you'll find that there are core human needs and desires across all those frameworks.
So we're talking about pretty big things when it comes to law and societal norms. And enterprises, large enterprises, can sometimes be the size of actually large cities even. So we start to look at an amount of people that comprise the enterprise in itself. And then you have the service desk supporting those people to do their work with increasing the technological tools to very different types of people. So if you look at the service desk of the future then, considering all these different aspects that we've talked about now, how could the service desk function as such evolve to be a better fit for the enterprise of the future?
I think what we're seeing, and certainly vendors out there are looking more at that enterprise level, not just, you know, if you like, the technical break-fix style environment of what a service desk is that it becomes more advanced in terms of its remit in what we cover, in how we help the organization. The service desk of tomorrow is something that, as I said, we can, jumping off from where we are, there's still some service desks that are very core focused on its infrastructure and its applications. It needs to see things wider. So not just look at things as a ticket, something that I've heard often in the past and remind all of my own students in training, etc., is that a person is not a ticket. So that human element still needs to be there, however we model or however we structure and design our service desk. And they're not just the number on the ticket. They're not just the text that we see in the ticket, that there is actually a human being on the other end of that having an experience with the technology, trying to do what they do. Now, technology is so wide and vast, we can't know everything. So this is where knowledge management and the strategy we have around knowledge management is so critical to service desk. And when we think about how quickly does that person need or desire an answer, that the way we shift that knowledge as close to where the question is being asked as possible is going to be a very important part of designing that flow of the conversation from when we're asked the question to when they receive the answer, whether it's a fix or I want or can I have or how do I, and, you know, that support that we provide the person. I think technology has given us that network, you know, our own, if you like, our own neural network of links that we can use through things like knowledge management, intelligence swarming, that those bridges or those networks that we create. One single person doesn't have to know everything, and they can't. But by the way we design and model that service desk, regardless whether we're physically in the room or we're sitting remote somewhere else, that we have that accessibility to still be able to communicate clearly, still be able to ask the right questions, be the data detective, be the problem solver, bring in those different cognitive skill sets, and build a capability far wider than, oh, go ask Joe in the corner. He knows everything.
interesting to think about how it is different, but based on what I'm listening to now, what you say about seeing the person behind the ticket number, that it's not just a ticket and it's not just a description. Is that still what, regardless of how AI is being used as a tool, as an AI buddy or otherwise, is that focus on understanding that it is people still taking care of the more complex tasks and helping people that maybe have increasingly complex tasks because technology evolves? So is that sort of like the thing that remains the same among everything else that changes?
Absolutely. I've always talked about it. There's three core interactions. There's the way people interact with technology. So how we use it, how we know it, to what depth we interact with it. There's people to process. So how we actually go about doing something. You know, there's usually more than one way to do something. And in the absence of being guided or in the absence of any instructions, we all do the best way we know how. So people to process. And part of that includes, of course, the guidance and the governance and things that sit around both the technology and the process. And then the final one is people to people. You know, that human interaction is still something that's greatly desired. And wanting to have that connectedness can be, I think a lot of people discovered the isolation that can happen when it's just you and your bit of tech and you lose that contact or that connectedness to other human beings. And to be connected virtually, even like you and I are today, I thank the heavens for technology every single day, you know. My family's on the other side of the world, and having gone through what we've gone through, I mean, technology is an amazing thing, but it's continually evolving. And I think people are evolving too, but the, you know, we just look at the youth rising power, you know, we're looking at our future customers, our future leaders, our future employers, our future designers and innovators. They don't know what this world was like without technology or the technology as we know it today. So from their perspective, it's very different in how they see and are modeling the world. So with five different generations in the workforce today, there's huge shifts. So our service desk agents do still need to be people, and they need to, you know, you're not going to like everyone and not everyone's going to like you, but you still need to be a people person when it comes to being a support agent.
I think that's a great way to wrap this up. Keep being a people person. And of course, we as a company have been founded on the whole premise that experiences are inherently human because people can feel, unlike technology. So thank you very much for joining us today. And if there are people who would like to work with you, learn more about your writing, about your thinking, what's the best way of finding you and reaching out to you?
Well, two key ways. LinkedIn, of course. You can find me just on Simone Jo Moore. That is definitely the easiest. I'm quite active there. And of course, you can always look at my website, which is also www.simonejomoore.com, and there's other things there. And I speak at various conferences and write articles for various companies as well. So I guess Google me.
Using technology.
Use the technology.
Thank you very much for coming, and as we always say at the end of the podcast episodes, stay safe and stay happy. And thank you for coming.
Keep well.
If you like this episode, giving the podcast a review helps others find this content as well. You can also visit our YouTube channel or our learning center at happysignals.com for some more video content.